Good day, care team. We're coming to you from the Biddeford location of Maine Behavioral Health. We've got some wonderful guests today. We've got a room full of amazing care team members, and we've got a lot of good stuff to talk about. But before we do that, I just need to have a conversation with all of us as care team members. I was unfortunately learned yesterday at a really difficult event in which the wrong patient was given a potentially harmful medication. And while I think about all of the implications of that, the risk to the patient, and hopefully this patient will come through this unscathed, the harm that's been caused in worrying about this, both by the patient and their family, the harm that's potentially been caused to a care team member who did this accidentally, we just really have to continue to be vigilant in how we think about positively identifying the patients in front of us. We do a lot of things that are particularly potentially risky, and that includes using devices in surgery. We use a lot of high energy devices in the operating room and when we're imaging patients. We're around high voltage in some of the work environments. There are lots of things that we do that are potentially risky, but there's probably nothing more risky than failing to appropriately identify the patient in front of us. It starts at hello and making sure that we know exactly who we're about to deliver care to. It's the most foundational and fundamental thing that we do, and there's really no reason we shouldn't get it right every single time. And it's easy to take for granted. I realize that we do it hundreds of times a day as individuals, but it's still so important that we take a moment. There's nothing more important than taking a moment and making sure that the person in front of us is who we think they are. And so I just want to implore every single person in the organization to continue to take positively identifying the patient in front of you seriously. And then, of course, washing your hands before engaging in care. So with that, let's introduce the team today. Caroline, it's good to be back here with you today. So I've been glad you were gone last time.
Yeah.
I was gone last couple of times. I actually had a couple of care team members email me and say, are you okay?
Yeah.
You've been gone. And yes, I'm okay. I took a little vacation a few weeks ago. And then, part of my job as CEO is sometimes I have to be outside in the external environment, and sometimes I can't control that timing. And so during our last open door, I was in Washington, D.C., meeting with members of Congress, talking about some issues that are really important to us, including behavioral health, which we're going to talk about today. And Caroline, it's good that you're back, too.
I'm back, too. I actually was sick.
Yeah.
Like, horribly, horribly sick, but it was one of those illnesses that, like, nobody wanted to see that. Like, it was just so. Jody did an amazing job. I was so grateful to her for being able to fill in, and you will be seeing more of Jody in the future on some times where I might not be able to be there. I do take vacations sometimes and, things like that. But it was still a great program, and I'm so excited to be here at Maine Behavioral Healthcare for this program because we hear so much about behavioral health, the importance of behavioral health, and how it's so integral to full health for people. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got some wonderful guests today that I'd love to bring on and introduce, if we can. And Kelly, why don't we start with you? Why don't you introduce yourself to the folks out across the organization?
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to be here because our team does an amazing job in taking care of patients that have behavioral health issues across the organization. So I'm Kelly Barton. I have the pleasure of serving as the president for Maine Behavioral Healthcare, and I've been with the organization for 3 years now.
Outstanding. Linda, how about you?
Morning. I'm Linda Durst. I am the Chief Medical Officer of Maine Behavioral Healthcare and the Chair of Psychiatry and Maine Medical Center. And I also have the privilege of working at our Biddeford Partial Hospital Program.
Outstanding. Maria?
Hi, I'm Maria Hagiani. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Maine Behavioral Healthcare, and I've been here just about 2 weeks longer than Kelly has.
And Kelly, you didn't arrive much longer before I did,
right.
Organization coming up on the 3 anniversaries, so good timing. So there is a lot going on with Maine Behavioral Healthcare, a tremendous amount of work. Do you want to talk, Kelly, a little bit about what all our behavioral health enterprise consists of?
Yeah, you know, I know that there were some slides displayed prior to this conversation that really showed some statistics and the number of patients that we touch on an annual basis. But we're really excited and proud to work for an organization that understands how important a comprehensive behavioral health continuum is to living our vision of creating the healthiest communities in America. So we offer services across the entire MaineHealth footprint. We have over 900 care team members that come to work each and every day that are so excited and passionate about assuring our patients get what they need. We have 34 locations of care across the footprint. And we offer services from intensive inpatient services to the crisis services in the emergency department, to our community-based services where we actually go out into homes to help people remain healthy in the community, as well as our outpatient clinics and services. And we serve specialized patients as well, like at our GLCOE. We serve individuals across the lifespan with developmental and autism.
It's amazing. It's an incredible offering of services. And clearly, with that many services you offer, we're more than meeting the demand for behavioral health care needs in our community. Linda, is that correct?
Sadly, no.
No. It's not. Yeah. There is huge demand for behavioral health care services, probably, in fact, more than there has ever been in our history. It's just a reality that we face in the moment. And what are some things that we have been doing to try to focus on creating access for those patients with behavioral health care needs?
So I feel like I'm channeling my inner Andy when I say, really, to create the healthiest communities in America, we do have to address this access issue, which actually it's a national problem, it's a state problem, it's a local problem, and it's within our system. So we've really taken a very multi-pronged approach, and I'm really proud of the approach that we've taken, because we're not looking for the easy answers. We're looking for how can we address access at all levels of care. And that means how do you address access upstream and downstream? I mean, you can just like say, let's just create more beds, but that's not actually the problem. It's how do you address people earlier in their symptomatology so they don't necessarily need to go to the hospital. Wouldn't that be great? And so we decided what were some easy wins to start with, and then how could we look at a more comprehensive approach. So our easy wins were how could we get more beds in our inpatient areas. So we were able to create, grow from 24 to 30 beds at our Stanford campus. And then we also looked at the need for adolescent beds. And there's been an increase in need for adolescent beds, especially post-pandemic. And we were able to increase our beds, but also make these single rooms, because sometimes we can't admit people because there's a problem putting two people into a room. So we increased our capacity for adolescent beds from 12 to 18. So immediately we could pull patients from the emergency departments, which is an issue. But our more comprehensive approach was in looking at upstream and downstream, how do we address people within primary care and specialty care? Because let's face it, a lot of times people don't see a psychiatrist. They go to their primary care doc or their specialty care doc. And so if those folks are seeing people who are symptomatic, how can they get help so they don't necessarily have to send them to psychiatry, which is already overburdened? So we have behavioral health clinicians penetrated through our practices throughout MaineHealth. And they are our first line to be able to see people. And then if that isn't enough for the person, we've developed e-consultations so people can consult through Epic. If that doesn't work, we are developing a system where we can have conversations between psychiatrists and primary care and specialty care docs. Going up the line, we're also developing consultations so that the psychiatrist can see the patient via telehealth or in person, And at the very top of the tier, if somebody isn't helped by any of those levels, they can be referred to psychiatry. But the other thing is we want to be able to get people back to primary care and specialty care if they're doing well. So we're trying to develop that process as well. So this is a multi-pronged, multi-year approach, but I think it will really do a lot for our system and create so much more access. The other thing that we're doing is to help get patients into inpatient beds more readily is developing the one-call system for admissions. That's also very exciting because there's a one-call system for medical patients, but people have a lot of trouble getting people into behavioral health beds, as you all know. I see people nodding. This way, can you call one center where you can figure out where this patient goes and you're not making several calls. We've piloted this program just in the last few weeks with both our Sanford Hospital and with Spring Harbor Hospital. We're working out the system so that we can broaden it across. And what we're doing is we already know what we have in terms of bed availability, and we look at what's the patient's situation, what's the patient's needs, so that when we get this call, we can immediately direct them to where they can go. So that's, it's just right hot off the presses, and we hope to do a lot of good work with that.
Yeah, Linda, thank you for that. And, you know, I know many times our emergency room physicians and APPs and primary care physicians and APPs and others are trying to seek places to you know, receive patients with behavioral health needs. And I know at times it's been frustrating, but I just really want to applaud you and the team for all of the work that you do. You should really be proud of that plan and really be proud of how comprehensive it is and frankly how patient-centered it is, because we're really trying to address things at the earliest potential opportunity to make the biggest impact to our patients. And so I'm really excited about that. I think you've pointed out too, Linda, there really is a huge overlap increasingly between what we've considered historically primary care versus behavioral health care. And in some ways that line is, in my mind, even getting blurred at times. And so I think your plan really talks about how we try to address things in a way that's going to make the most sense. So thank you for all of that. So Marie, when I first met you, gosh, it was almost 3 years ago.
Right.
I think we were getting ready at the time to move some of our services for children with autism from downtown Portland to the Glickman Water Center. Yep. And you've done a lot of projects and really helping organize this team and deliver and execute on all that has to occur every day. There's so much going on. Tell us something that you're really excited about.
So I appreciate that, Andy. The one thing that, especially here at the Biddeford office, that stands out is our certified community behavioral health clinics. It's a little bit of a misnomer because it's not really a clinic. It's more like a platform. And it reminds me of what Maine Health is actually doing about coming together with a new operating system. And the system didn't go away. It's just how we're working within the system. And the four things, the pillars that sort of stand out within the CCBHC, the first one is access. So I'm kind of going to piggyback onto what Linda was saying. But access in a different way. It's really about holistically, how are we looking at the patients? And one of the opportunities is for us to use individuals that we don't typically think of as access, right? We're thinking of therapists or psychiatrists, but we have care coordinators, we have peers, we have individuals who are going to talk to the patient on a more frequent basis and maybe look at things a little differently. And it's really about getting the patient the right care at the right time, but also just maybe being a partner on a very complicated system. The second part of it is quality. So there's a requirement for us to have an outcome-based process, but not only looking at the outcomes, but who is providing those services and what evidence-based practices are we using. So there's a lot of focus on training. We have two CCBHC grants, one here in York County and one up in Waldo-Knox County area, and a lot of focus is going to be about workforce development, making sure that we've got the right workforce in place so that we can provide those services. And that's going to feed the quality work that we do. And the next part is partnerships. So just as we're we've in the past provided services maybe in a little bit of a silo. We're partnering within Maine Health, within Maine Behavioral Healthcare, but also with the community. We can't do this. It stood out when we were going through COVID. I watched Dora Mills do a presentation about how the state of Maine came together to really address COVID. We will never be out of business. I wish we could be. I mean, that would be the best. But the state of Maine has to look at how we're going to address behavioral health and those partnerships with other entities within the state, the crisis services and other partners. In fact, we share an FTE with one of them to be able to serve our patients. And so that's really, really important as we're starting to consider how we're going to take care of them. And the final part, because there is reimbursement, right? We do need to get paid for some of these services, is going back to providers that are supporting the patient but aren't typically reimbursed. So the state is now looking at what we call a prospective payment system and how to hold the system viable, so to speak, so that we can provide care coordinators, peers, and other types of services that we don't typically see and that we may be able to at least cover the costs. So that's the exciting part.
Yeah, oh my gosh, a lot there. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I heard a lot about patient-centered and our values of ownership and excellence as well. And you highlight a number of important things. One of the things you highlight is that for us, money is a resource that's required in order to be able to provide these services. And that we can't do it alone.
No.
And so as we think about working together so our communities are the healthiest in America, it goes back to that working together part. And we definitely need the help of the state and the federal government in some ways. Those are some of the conversations I was having with some of our congressional representatives about the need for increased behavioral health funding and how we think about delivering behavioral health services. So it really is that working together in order to ensure that we're doing that. And you know, as you all talk about all that you're doing around behavioral health, whether it's thinking about the entire enterprise, the access focus, some of the other innovative ways that we're trying to adapt to the environment around us to be able to provide that care, you quickly begin to realize that whether someone has a behavioral health diagnosis in their chart or not, we're all behavioral health patients. We're all impacted by anxiety, by depression, by tough things in our environment, by challenges with substances and other things. And so many of the things that you're discussing and describing are things that we really have to think about how we integrate into every aspect of how we deliver care if we're really going to be effective, you know, long term. So Kelly, as we're thinking about all that you do, you have a little something to maybe show us a little bit about the impact that Maine Behavioral Healthcare can have?
I do, Andy. Okay, so we're going to actually share a video of our team and the impact that they made on a life of just one of many patients that they serve. This particular location's at our Biddeford office on Main Street. We do offer SUD, substance use disorder services in several locations across the Maine Health footprint, but I think this is a really nice example of, and really inspired me to really showcase the difference that's being made in lives.
Okay, perfect.
I am a plumber, a master plumber. I just got my master's license. I like being able to fix a problem that other people naturally wouldn't be able to fix. Looks good, all set. I've been through kind of a roller coaster basically since I turned 21. I would use to kill time or to deal with stress. Alcohol and marijuana had such an impact on how I was feeling. I started to notice the effect that it was having on people around me and myself and my son. I just needed to get out of that rhythm and change my path. Morning.
Morning, how's it going?
When you first walk in, you kind of feel like nervous and, you know, maybe like you're being looked at in a certain way because of your choices. But then as you meet these people and you realize that, you know, you're here for a reason and they're here for a reason and they want to help you succeed.
I think it's an honor and I think it's a pleasure to be able to pick up the phone on someone's worst day when they're reaching out for help. We run a mental health and substance use day treatment program and ambulatory withdrawal. Our partial hospitalization program, we serve as a step down from the inpatient unit. We would love to avoid hospitalization if we can, So we work closely with the emergency rooms, primary care offices, and really throughout the community. So there's no place within Maine Health that we don't interface with.
How's it going? I'm Heather.
You can't predetermine who's going to be successful or not. I get real joy when it's people that struggle day one, but then you see them on the last day and they put their whole life back together. And not that they're not gonna struggle, but that they have the skills to get through it if they do. That's just rewarding.
Having such supportive people around you, it makes it all so much easier to know you're not alone. When I'm driving down the street and I know I don't have a device in my car, or I know I can drive by a cop and be like, hey, how's it going? I'm not doing anything wrong. I mean, it's a really neat feeling.
Left hand at the top. There you go. Ready?
Now that I'm clear and feeling so much better, I just notice the benefits every day. I just didn't realize what I was missing.
Trying to get it from me.
I'm grateful for my bag of tools. I'm grateful for my car and my son having clothes on my back. I'm grateful for everything.
Wow. Amazing. It's incredible to see how powerfully you all as a care team really impact people in our community. So thank you for all the incredible work that you do. So when you think about behavioral health outcomes, you know, the best case scenario is what we just saw in that video, where someone really is able to get their life back on track and be able to function and do the things they need to do. Think about the worst case scenario. Sometimes they're individuals who either attempt or successfully harm themselves, up to and including suicide. What are some of the things that you all are doing to try to prevent that from occurring?
Well, I'm very proud to say that we at Maine Behavioral Healthcare and also at Maine Health have undertaken a journey towards zero suicide. And zero suicide is a framework around suicide care, which is endorsed nationally by SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. It was started in 2014 with SAMHSA, as well as the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention and the National Suicide Resource Center. And I'm very happy that we at Maine Health have agreed to go on this journey to improve suicide care. It's so important because there's few things more tragic than somebody dying by suicide. And so how can we make an impact to help reduce that happening? And the goal being, is it possible? Probably not, but let's work towards getting towards zero. And that's where that name comes from. And so 3 years ago, we started work within Maine Behavioral Healthcare, knowing that we needed support around this to do this work. And fortunately, this past fall, we were awarded a $2 million grant from SAMHSA to be able to expedite this work. But it's actually easy work in the respect that it's common sense work, but how do you put it all into place? And how do you put all the pieces into place? And so Zero Suicide provides this framework of pillars, and there's 7 pillars, and some of them include training people. How do you train people on screening and assessing around suicide, which is important, because surprisingly, a lot of people don't get very specific training. You would think, I'm in behavioral health, I should know this. But there's actually very specific training around it. And how do you create a workforce that feels confident and competent to provide suicide care? That's really critical, and that's what we're trying to provide. Another pillar is leadership buy-in. You can't be able to expand this project without the buy-in of leadership. And so we have that, and we're very proud of that. Other things like, how do you engage patients through the electronic health record? How do you notify people through the electronic health record when there's somebody who's struggling and needs outreach? How do you use data to look at your numbers and to be able to respond to them? And, you know, these are, and handoff communication. One of the things that I notice that where we fall down is we don't tell people from one level of care to the next. So how do we make sure that we're doing that successfully? So these are all the elements. But the other thing that's really important, it's just not within behavioral health, because sadly, 40 to 50% of people who die by suicide were seen by a primary care doc within a month of their death. How do we help primary care to be able to address this issue and specialty care? So this framework involves not only training behavioral health folks, but also people in other disciplines, and not just clinical people, but non-clinical people. You know, like when you're facing somebody who's out of breath and collapses on the street, a lot of us are trained in CPR, right? Well, wouldn't it be nice if people were trained in something like mental health first aid, where you know what to do when you see somebody crying on the street or you see somebody struggling? Wouldn't it be nice if our reception staff knew how to intervene when somebody was struggling in the waiting room, or a housekeeping person who saw someone behaving in a certain way in their room, and what should they do? Who should they go to? So we're trying to prepare our people so they, across the board, can address this public health issue. And we also want to be able to interface with our communities and are looking at working with schools, even Rotary clubs, actually. So this is very exciting work. And we have a big kickoff this Friday for our grant. I hope you all can attend. We already have over 300 people who've registered. So if you go on the Maine Health intranet, there we go, you can register. It takes place from 11:30 to 2. And I hope I get to see you there as well. But thank you. I could talk about this all day, but I'll stop.
Linda, we appreciate your passion for this and the importance of it. And, you know, when we talk about the importance of this, I want to go back to, Kelly, something you said earlier, which is it's hard to envision achieving our vision of working together so our communities are the healthiest in America without behavioral health services. And I just want to reiterate just how true that is. You know, and one of the things that attracted me to Maine Health was the significant and substantial investment Maine Health has made in behavioral health services historically. Because I don't think you can achieve a vision like working together so our communities are the healthiest in America without addressing behavioral health issues. And we recognize increasingly the important role behavioral health plays in the rest of our health and how we think about defining health and well-being. And so, you know, those of you who aren't from away may not necessarily appreciate the degree to which other health systems have not invested in behavioral health services or really underinvested in behavioral health services. Some of that has to do with the challenges of reimbursement and other things and funding. But at the same time, we can't ignore the reality of what our communities need. And so we will always be an organization that is deeply and passionately committed to the behavioral health care of those we serve and the communities we represent. So it's important. So thank you all for being here. So Caroline, I bet we've got a number of people with a whole lot of questions. What do you
think? I sure hope so.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We've got a whole room full of people.
Yes,
here.
We do.
Who know a lot about behavioral health. Yep. And so I just want to remind everybody of the rules of the road here. For one thing, if you've got a question, you're in the room, please just raise your hand. And I do want to introduce someone to our audience. Watching on Teams, Nadine Grosso, who is the Director of Communications at Maine Behavioral Healthcare, is going to be helping me walking around the room with the microphone. So there's Nadine on camera there. So that is who that is. If you are not in this room, I'm also taking your questions. That's why we brought the computer today. Just put them in the chat, first and last names and pronouns, please, because we don't take anonymous questions. As always, when we're on the road, we prioritize questions that are about this local health system. So in this case, we're prioritizing questions about behavioral health. But of course, any questions are okay. And I did print out questions that came in from email as well, so we'll try to get to some of those too. So with that, people in the room, I know you got questions. Raise your hand if you have a question. All right, I'll let Nadine take that one.
Hi there. So I have a question. It's not a real hard one. It's I'm wondering if there are any advocacy efforts being made with the state to improve behavioral health services.
Tell us who you are.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Caroline Raymond. I'm the Senior Director of Community Services.
Fantastic. Yeah. Kelly, do you want to start with that?
I do. Yeah. Well, great question, Caroline. Mm-hmm. And so we are so fortunate to be able to partner with Katie Fulham Harris and the entire external affairs team at Maine Health to really move forward and remove barriers that we're seeing at both the state and the federal level. So every year, you know, we identify the priorities that we want to work on from a behavioral health perspective, how we can take better care of our patients, sometimes funding issues as well. But then I'll really work with Katie and advocate for those. So this past year, we advocated for some substance use disorder services, as well as medication management. We know how important that is, and it was under some funding cuts. So really helping the legislature understand how important those services are to moving upstream, as Linda talked about earlier, as well as, you know, we are in real need of secured locked residential for adolescents in the state. And so those have been some of the top priorities. But yes, lots of work, especially during the legislative session. So thanks for your question.
Yeah, and Caroline, just to give you a story, I was in Augusta yesterday at the State House about a matter around workforce development and economic development for our communities. And Katie Fulham Harris, our Chief Government Affairs Officer, won't allow me in there unchaperoned. She followed me around. And at every interaction, including with the governor in the governor's office and with four other representatives or senators, she brought up a behavioral health issue that we're working on. So we were not there for behavioral health reasons, but at every interaction with an elected official, behavioral health was brought up. So I just want to assure you it is. And then, as I referenced earlier, when I was in Washington, D.C. recently, talking to members of the House of Representatives with some peers, we spent a good portion of that time focusing on the tremendous behavioral health needs of our communities. So it will continue to be a priority from an advocacy standpoint, for sure. All right, thank you. Other questions?
All right, go ahead, stand on up. Introduce yourself and ask a question.
Hi, I'm Diane Pomelo. I'm a CCMA in the Springvale MBH office. And my question is, what is Maine Health doing to obtain and retain providers at MBH?
Ah. Linda, you want to start with that?
Yeah, I can certainly take that on. So we're one of the first groups within Maine Health to have a system-wide meeting on a weekly basis, actually. To address a provider recruitment and retention. And so we look at all the openings within our system and we strategize together to be able to plan where we can draw from to recruit. It's very difficult. It's a very competitive market, I have to say. And so we really try to get ahead of that, knowing that there are a lot of competitors. But I'm confident that we have a team devoted particularly towards behavioral health, and that's a direct line staff recruitment individual as well as their supervisor. And more recently, we just hired a sourcer, and this is someone who actually proactively goes to different areas in the country to look at where we might find potential recruits. We also talk about retention and, you know, what are the things that make it a positive experience. I think some of the activities that we're involved in, like CCBHC, like our Zero Suicide Program, like a lot of the levels of care are attractive to people. And also we're an academic health system that's attractive, and we really try to promote those elements. We're also very fortunate that we have our own training programs that we try very vigorously to recruit from, because we are training these people, we have faith in these people. And we've had a lot of success actually in that particular area. The other thing is creating innovative models of care that are also attractive. So we've been innovative in developing a 7-on-7 off program on our inpatient model. How do we address people who want to work part-time? How do we put that together? To be very flexible in working models so people are attracted to coming. We also recently developed a flow pool model so that we can have coverage within our own system of our own employees, that we don't have to rely on locums companies who, you know, provide sometimes suboptimal resources who aren't very reliable. So we're very active. We just know it's a difficult climate, but I have to say we're really working very diligently in this area.
Yeah, and Linda, we're also growing more at home too. And so with our residency training programs, you know, the licensure combination of Southern Maine and Maine Medical Center will enable us to increase our federally funded graduate medical education slots by about 30%. And we're trying to launch a rural behavioral health or psychiatry
residency. Actually, I would just say we launched it.
That's
so
right.
We do have a rural program. And just so you know, we matched every program this year.
Fantastic.
And we also matched from very top of our list, which is unheard of.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congratulations on that. So, great question.
So we have a very active chat. So I usually stay in the room a little longer before the chat, but the chat's got a lot going on.
Yes.
The one thing I did want to add, and I think you addressed this, Linda, but there was actually a question specifically about addressing burnout. I'm guessing that some of these flexibility measures that you're taking, that's about burnout as well.
Yes. You know, we have a workforce that's much more interested in a balanced lifestyle, understandably. And this is not easy work that we do. So people oftentimes want to work part-time. So how do we put together different part-time schedules? And we've been very successful with that.
And I'll take one more from the chat, and then we'll go back to the room, even though there are some others in the chat, and then we'll come back to the chat. But this one actually has to do with the rebrand and how it impacts Maine Behavioral Healthcare. The question is, when Maine Health moved to a regional organizational structure, Maine Behavioral Healthcare remained intact across the footprint, serving essentially as its own region. With the rebranding project, are there plans to divide Maine Behavioral Healthcare services into the existing Maine Health regions? If so, when might we learn more about how this impacts the care team?
All right. So we work really closely with the regional operating model. And so obviously we have services across the Maine Health footprint, and there are uniquenesses in every local community as well as the regions. So we're tightly connected to them. What I'm most excited about with the rebrand is since I've come here, is really painting this vision for Maine Health that we are one behavioral health, right? Across the system, a full continuum of care. And that's how our patients and families see us. So we need to operate that way. And so less about really kind of becoming a regional model, but fitting into that structure that so that we assure there's good communication and continuity within a region. And also leveraging the scarce resources, right? We can't provide every service in every local community, but how do we maximize the services that exist in a region so that patients can get the care closest to home?
Yeah, and I think just to reassure the care team member who asked the question, we really don't have any major structure changes planned for Maine Behavioral Health or the regions anytime soon.
All right, who in the room has a question?
Hi, I'm Felicia LaPointe. I am a referral navigator with our access team, and I process referrals for outpatient services in York County. It's a multi-layered question. So, Dr. Durst, you had mentioned e-consults. Can you define what an e-consult is across the organization? Because I know helping in each office, it's typically identified as something different in each location.
So e-consultation, is the ability for a provider, so a primary care provider or a specialty care provider, to be able to reach out to the psychiatrist and to pose a clinical question. And so what's good about it is it provides the record number of the patient, so the psychiatrist can review the record, look at the question, and just respond to that question.
Okay, and thank you. So I know in York County, we are lucky to have the CCBHC grant, which I know a lot of people that are working in the offices and leadership, they're fully invested in making all of our MBH locations part of CCBHC to grant access to care. Now, a lot of our patients who are coming in, they don't have primary care providers. Is there something that Maine Health is doing to work with our local PCP offices to generate access to PCP care for patients who are stabilized with our outpatient psychiatrist to go back to the PCPs?
Yes. that's part of the process that we're going through right now. So for instance, we have collaborated with our community health partners, Dr. Rob Chamberlain, and also the Maine Health Medical Group, Dr. Cornelius Ferreira, about how we interact with primary care so that they're comfortable managing patients once we feel that they can work within the primary care practice. So, you know, it's a comfort level. And so what we're trying to do is certainly gain that trust so that people are comfortable in moving back, but also knowing that, you know, we don't hand it off and say, bye, see you next time, or bye forever. We're there as their safety net so that if they're having ongoing issues, they can reconnect with us. If need be, the patient can go back to us. But it's in building that trust. And so we're looking at piloting this in, you know, in certain areas and then learning from that and expanding.
The other thing I would just add is we also know that we have a fair amount of patients that come to us without a primary care connection, and that's such an important connection, right, from an overall health and well-being perspective. So we have several teams, the Assertive Community Treatment Team, in particular case management, proactively looking at their patient lists and saying who doesn't have a primary care provider and helping to connect them to one.
And then just to piggyback on that, as part of the CCBHC is bringing primary care integrated into behavioral health. And so we're looking at family nurse practitioners and if we could get a primary care provider to stop in so that those patients that are part of our clinic here who don't have a primary care provider at least can start to get connected. So multi-pronged.
Here, we have another question back here.
Stand up.
Hi, I'm Valerie Campagna. I'm in the communication office at Maine Behavioral Healthcare. And I have to say thank you, Andy, so much for being here and for all the people for putting up this incredible production. I'm so thrilled that we have an opportunity to share the great work of this team with all of Maine Health and validating our work. I just love that. My question is this. Are there any plans to make behavioral health a more concrete service line? By that, I mean we have the Cancer Care Network. We have children's as a service line. I see newsletters from them. But we seem to be a little bit under the radar. So I'd love for us to be more high profile.
All right, great, great point. You know, we talk a lot about, sort of an institute model as sort of being the evolution of how we think about care across the continuum. And we talk all the time about, we think Maine Behavioral Health is sort of the model of an institute within Maine Health, because I think you already are much of that, believe it or not. And so I do think that actually in terms of how you think, how you're organized, how decisions are made, I think you do that incredibly effectively already, frankly, with a lot of autonomy across the system and really developing that care coordination and thinking about how you fit into each of the regions and how you do all of that in a way that's really, really pretty incredible today. At the same time, I have to tell you, I'm a little conflicted in that, because in my mind, one of the challenges with behavioral health in today's practice of modern healthcare is that we have segregated it as sort of a separate specialty. And in my mind, it ought to be reintegrated into every single thing we do. And so some of you have heard me say before that my dream would be that one day I show up to one of our hospitals and I'm in the parking lot walking in with a nurse. And if I ask that nurse, what their job is, they tell me, oh, I'm a behavioral health nurse, but I work in labor and delivery. Or I'm a behavioral health, physician, but I replace knees in the operating room. That everybody views that their role is to get to a patient's state of mind. So to me, there's a bit of a dichotomy there. Yes, we need our behavioral health team to do what they're already doing, which is being a robust integrated service across the footprint. And at the same time, I think figuring out how we reintegrate more behavioral health care into every single interaction with a patient.
I'm going to do a chat question, email question, then we will come back to the room because I saw hands started going up again, which I love. But I did promise people in the chat we'd get back to the chat. So this question is from Vanessa, and it really is speaking to an issue that I think has come up a lot since the Lewiston shooting. Vanessa wanted to know if someone could speak to Maine Behavioral Healthcare's role, if any, in screening patients in relation to Maine's yellow flag law. And I think it might be helpful for people who aren't familiar with the yellow flag law if someone can give a brief overview of that as well. I don't know who wants to speak of that.
The yellow flag law involves if there is a concern in the community about somebody who might be violent, could they be assessed to determine if their weapons would be removed from them? And the issue, so we actually are not involved in yellow flag evaluations. And there was a reason behind that. There was some concern about whether people might actually be targeted if they were doing these evaluations. But in terms of screening around violence risk, that is actually something that we are very active in and actually are doing some groundbreaking work, which is very exciting. And that is, and this is earlier, before Lewiston actually, when there were some events that involved people with behavioral health issues. And again, it's the minority of issues, truthfully, that this occurs. But when it does occur, there's a lot of press around it. When one of these prior events occurred, we worked together as a system to investigate how could we more successfully screen for violence so we could treatment plan around it, just like we do for suicide. And we have a very talented forensic psychiatrist in our midst who we worked with, and we collaborated with Fordham University and actually did some work around a violence screening. And we validated the screening against the gold standard. And now all patients that are going through the emergency department at Maine Medical Center get a violence screening. And so this helps us identify, are there people higher risk than others? And now we're actually looking to see if that screen does seem to predict whether there's increased elements of violence and aggression within the inpatient unit. And we're going to use that, hopefully, if we get a positive response to that, we can then expand. But we're also doing some work at looking at what questions can we ask in the ambulatory side of things to just put our radar up and make us aware to treatment plan around this individual so we could help them and prevent their risk and lower their risk, which is helpful to them, it's helpful to our staff, and helpful to our community.
Thank you. We had an email question that came in specifically around behavioral health, so I wanted to definitely get to that. Elizabeth asked, I would like to know if there are any advancements in commercial insurance supporting the work done by behavioral health professionals. I see a lot of chuckles and nods in this crowd here. As people who work in this industry know, most behavioral health services are covered by Medicare, Medicaid, or self-pay, but that can make it difficult for people to access needed services.
So I'm going to take that question. We actually do have commercial payer contracts for the more traditional services, so our medication management, our therapy, partial hospitalization, certainly on our inpatient unit, and our substance use disorder services. And those include Cigna, Anthem, Aetna, and the behavioral health care plan. It is where we have community-based services, that those are not commercially supported. So the multi-systemic therapy, the ACT team, the behavioral health homes, case management, we have started conversations with the contract managers just to start investigating that. But if there is a question about specific service that Elizabeth has, she's more than welcome to reach out to me, and I can try to address that.
Great, thanks, you.
Caroline.
I'm going to take a little stroll over here because we had a hand up right here. So here you are.
Good morning. I'm Dori Hacker. I'm the director of the CCBHC grant implementation down here in York County. And I've been working with this organization for a super long time. And I've worked for a lot of other organizations. And I first of all just want to give a shout out. I don't think we have ever had such a dedicated, innovative team who really understands what is needed within our workforce. There is wisdom here, there's excitement, and it's not just in senior leadership, it's in management and, you know, middle management and at the front door. And we've never had a more burnt out workforce, and we've never had a hard time hiring. We really hope CCBHC and reimbursement rates can support that process, and it's gonna take some time, and we're still in this urgent place where it feels a little bit, at least, you know, in some of our clinics, like we can't get ahead of it in terms of staffing. So when we talk about access and we talk about the mental health of our workforce, both in the medical community and in the behavioral health community, because the well-being of both of them are sort of dependent on our behavioral health teams, how much conversation around where money is allocated in Maine Health. My other point was medical systems have better reimbursement rates. So we struggle more partly because of that. So how much time is invested around how do we sustain this part of our organization? How do we want to invest some of our allocated monies here, even the non-reimbursable pieces, so that we can get ahead of it while we're building some pretty innovative programs? Thank you.
Great. Do you want to start, or do you want me to take that?
Yeah, no, Dori, I think we've had these conversations quite a bit, and you're right, we're in unprecedented times in terms of the workforce shortage, as well as coming out of COVID, and trying to increase access, because we know that there's a huge demand for care for behavioral health services. So I think some of the things that Dr. Durst talked about in terms of how we're supporting overall health and well-being, and how can we get creative in scheduling, right, for those individuals who want to work part-time. We've had great response from our inpatient providers as it relates to the 7-on-7-off, and I think we have to continue, right, to look at models that support that work-life balance that we know people are looking for. I think the other thing too is, you know, going back, I've never felt so supported in an organization in terms of the investment in behavioral health, right? It truly is an investment, and we feel that. So I think it's going to be up to all of us, right, as a team to say, what are those things we need to do to support our workforce to assure that they are healthy and not burning out? I think some of the care models will do some of that, right? But it's going to take us some time to get through that as we work through the staffing challenges. So I don't know, Linda or Maria.
Can I just clarify? I think the leadership at Maine Behavioral Healthcare is doing a tremendous amount to sustain the workforce. I think I'm thinking about the whole network.
I was thinking it didn't sound quite right. I'm thinking about the whole network, like, you know, and the benefit of being a part of a larger system is really sort of having some parts of our system support other parts of our system to sustain ourselves. So I want to acknowledge, absolutely, there's a huge priority within Maine Behavioral Healthcare, and I wanted to hear from Andy how those conversations play out at Maine Health.
For sure. And, you know, the reality is we do that today, so most of our behavioral health services are subsidized by other aspects of our care delivery system, which in some ways is unfortunate because behavioral health services in and of themselves create tremendous value. Just in the current reimbursement model, we don't get to recognize that value, which is unfortunate. A lot of this stems from the way that Medicare traditionally reimburses for services. And so in the moment, in the wake of COVID, dealing with all that we're dealing with and recognizing that the healthcare workforce shortage that we feel here is being felt everywhere across the country, there is no pot of gold out there to solve some of these challenges. You know, we're trying to figure out how to do that at a time where we're barely breaking even. And so that makes it really hard to do radical things to change the way we're doing stuff. At the same time, we are having conversations to say where we have opportunities to deviate from how Medicare reimburses services, are there opportunities to internally reallocate some of that reimbursement in a different way? And so I actually had that conversation with the market president, one of our large commercial payers yesterday. Al Swallow, our chief financial officer, and I, and Jen Moore, who leads our ACO and does our payer contracting, have had these conversations too. How can we start to think differently about that? So we're early in that process. The ultimate answer is we have to have less reliance on fee-for-service revenue. And that's why in our strategic plan, we have a financial goal around earnings diversification. That's not because we plan to open casinos and diversify our revenue that way. It's because we have to push ourselves. We need to challenge and push ourselves to diversify away from just purely fee-for-service revenue. And that was the motivation of that goal. So if we were paid in a purely capitated environment where our goal was to do everything we could financially to keep patients from requiring hospital services, the data is pretty clear in the medical literature that we will be all about engaging a patient's state of mind to ensure they're not receiving unnecessary care. Unfortunately, in the current environment, we're reinforced to do everything we possibly can to the patient so we're not financially impacted by not getting to a patient's state of mind. So we've got to change the reimbursement model. Now, there are not a lot of great examples of where that has truly occurred. Kaiser Permanente in California is probably the closest example, but the challenge with that system is it's a closed system. So you can only use Kaiser services on the healthcare delivery side if you have Kaiser insurance. That's not going to work in a place like Maine, where we're effectively the only game in town. It works for Kaiser because they're in large cities where there are multiple competing healthcare delivery systems. Mm-hmm. So we've got to increasingly push ourselves to think about how we can change that reimbursement model. And we are trying to figure out ways to do that, but that's going to be the ultimate solution to that problem. And in the meantime, I do think there are some intermediary steps, and we're just taking the first baby steps in thinking about that, but really appreciate that question. Mm-hmm. You bet.
All right, thank you, everyone. So we are coming up pretty close to 10 o'clock, which means we are out of time for this. However, I know that Andy and Kelly and Linda and Maria are happy to stay here and chat with the people in this room if you've got additional questions. Those of you who are shy because you didn't want to be on Teams, but you actually have things to say, that'd be great. And then in the meantime, thank you all for being here. Thank you to the brand operations team for Maine Health for setting up this amazing program. And I know we've got some recognitions, including someone right here in this room. So Kelly, go right ahead.
Yes, so I am super excited to be able to recognize Barbara St. Pierre. So I got to interact with Barbara not too long ago. Barbara works behind the scenes supporting our crisis billing for the organization. And she has been with Maine Behavioral Healthcare for 26 and a half years. She is a veteran of the United States Army. And when you talk to Barbara, she just exudes passion and dedication for the work that she does. So I wanted to recognize her for all that she's done. And a special tidbit. She's the biggest fan of Andy's Open Door. She watches every episode.
Thank you, Barbara. That's great.
That's right.
And thank you for your service to our nation, and thank you for your service to Maine Health and our patients for all those years. We're grateful.
Thank you.
That's wonderful.
And Andy, we've got some patient experience recognitions from you as well.
Yes, we do. So we've got a couple of Maine Behavioral Health Care patient experience comments. So the treatment is life-saving. Thanks to Jenna, my transformation has been nothing short of a miracle. I'm blessed to have found Jenna Nunziato, who's one of our licensed social workers at Maine Behavioral Health. Just another inspiring story about how we've been able to change a life. And then for Dr. Thaddeus Shatruk, Dr. Shattuck is awesome. I'm in crisis mode and I'm going through some tough stuff. He's been very compassionate and helpful. And so it sounds like empathy at every interaction on that part. So big shout out to the entire Maine Behavioral Healthcare team for all that you do every day to help us live our vision of working together so our communities are the healthiest in America. So thanks everyone. Please, please, please make sure you're positively identifying the patient in front of you and washing your hands before engaging in care. I think April 4th is the next date for our next open door. And Jess Loxton from our Center of Excellence for APPs will be with us. And so I'm excited about that conversation and look forward to seeing all of you then. Thank you.